Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Damage Report Big JR Wednesday, or Impeachment Wednesday. You decide.
Hey, I'll take Impeachment Wednesday if that's what we get out of the whole thing. I feel like this happens a lot on Wednesdays. Do they schedule it for the middle of the week? Or is this because the hearings run all week and then, you know?
No, Wednesday, I mean, a couple times it's been starts on Wednesdays. I think they just want to make sure that you get to give your 2 cents.
Come on. All the members of the House First Intelligence Committee wanted me to speak on it, and now the Judiciary Committee also want me to speak on it. Thank you, guys.
There you go. Now, we've got a lot that we're going to be talking about today. Obviously, we're going to be going over some of the initial results from the hearing today, both the gigantic 300-page written report and then some of the video, too. But later on, we have a candidate who's going to be joining us, Donald Trump mocked on the world stage by world leaders, and more on the climate crisis. Those solar panel tariffs from a couple years ago that... Look, I predicted that it would be bad. Was I right? Was I wrong? We'll find out later on the show today. And Devin Nunes has a new hobby. We'll let you know what it is at the end of the day. But why don't we start off with the big news of the morning involving those hearings. In advance of the big hearings this morning, a massive novel-length report was put out about the impeachment proceedings, the evidence that had been gathered, all of that. And so we want to give you just a few little excerpts from that report. This is a pretty important section. The impeachment inquiry has found that President Trump personally and acting through agents within and outside of the US government solicited the interference of a foreign government, Ukraine, to benefit his reelection. Just a reminder for all the people who might say, this whole thing,
it's
complicated. I can't really follow it. Well, that's pretty short. I think that's tweetable, actually. Why don't we test it? Why don't you tweet that, actually?
And also, and by the way, also a small other caveat. I promise I won't filibuster this because there's a lot to get to. But to benefit his re-election. When would his re-election be? Mm-hmm. In 2020. So every time they keep saying, oh, you guys getting caught up in 2016. This is about 2016. This is about 2020. Yeah. It happened this year.
Continue. Well, and also the argument that, well, you can't impeach a president in the last year, which smacks of Merrick Garland. There's nothing in the Constitution that says that. And if the crime is related to the re-election effort, I think the impeachment effort gets to be as well. I think that's a fair bounce. But anyway, more from the report. The impeachment inquiry into Donald J. Trump, the 45th president of the United States, uncovering a months-long effort by President Trump to use the powers of his office to solicit foreign interference on his behalf in the 2020 election. It also asserts that Mr. Trump's scheme subverted US foreign policy towards Ukraine and undermined our national security in favor of two politically motivated investigations that would help his presidential re-election campaign. The report also lays out what it calls an unprecedented campaign of obstruction of this impeachment inquiry by Mr. Trump, a campaign of obstruction that continues up until right now. And again, reminders that they wanted the investigations to be announced. The CNN interview where the Ukrainian president was going to announce it had already been scheduled. It was only called off because this entire thing was revealed. The aid had been held. Ukraine's government knew about it. They had meetings about how exactly they were going to work through this really incredibly difficult political situation. So all of the obfuscations that Jim Jordan and others are going to try to use that, well, you have to have these 37 requirements before it can become an impeachable offense. They got them. They got all of them. They don't have to have them, but they got them. Okay, so that's some of what comes out of the report. If you'd like to read the entire thing, take a week off and you can work your way through it. But it is pretty clear about what is known about the Ukraine scandal, what was revealed during both the closed door hearings and once they became very public, there was cross-examination and all of that.
And again, this is backed up by all of the evidence, all the witnesses that were first off with the private depositions and then things that happened in public. So again, all the things that Republicans, pundits to representatives to senators all called for, they did. Mm-hmm. And also, in asking for the president, his personal attorney, Rudy Giuliani, and everyone else to come and testify or speak on their behalf or say what they need to say to refute it, none of that was carried out by any of them. Mm-hmm. So then when he's asked, how come you're not at one of his chopper talks, how come you're not coming out and actually participating in it since you said this is all you haven't had a chance to? It's just a sham. I don't want to. Mm-hmm. So that's your choice, bro.
Yeah. Yeah. And we're going to get into the obstruction of justice thing. But like there's a lot of different ways that you can attempt to obstruct justice. You know, blocking documents from being released, which they've done. That's one way. Blocking witnesses who have information that's needed. That's another way. And they've done that. But then also like publicly attacking the entire process as a sham and a witch hunt that you're not going to participate in. It becomes, I think, harder to imply that you're not obstructing justice when you're literally calling the entire constitutional endeavor illegitimate and you say you're not going to participate in it. I think that that's a strong foundation on which you can build an obstruction of justice case.
Yes.
Okay, now let's move to today's actual hearings. Today, a number of different witnesses were called, both by the Democrats, also by the Republicans. And there's just a few excerpts we want you to see. There's a good chance you've been watching some of this. But let's go first to Professor Noah Feldman, who had this to say about what Donald Trump did.
President Trump's conduct, as described in the testimony and evidence, clearly constitutes impeachable high crimes and misdemeanors under the Constitution. In particular, the memorandum and other testimony relating to the July 25th, 2019 phone call between the two presidents, President Trump and President Zelensky, more than sufficiently indicates that President Trump abused his office by soliciting the president of Ukraine to investigate his political rivals in order to gain personal political advantage, including in relation to the 2020 election. Again, the words abuse of office are not mystical or magical. They are very clear. The abuse of office occurs when the president uses a feature of his power, the awesome power of his office, not to serve the interests of the American public, but to serve his personal, individual, partisan electoral interests.
And that's the thing where, like there could be scandals that are too complicated or arcane or technical for most people to follow. But the idea that this guy is using the office of the president to benefit himself, not us, not the country, not even like his party or whatever, which wouldn't be acceptable, but even just himself, I think that people can get this. I think that's one of the reasons that support for impeachment rose so quickly in the initial weeks of this thing. It's not complicated. And we knew who he was. Remember earlier this year, there was like a week of controversy around an interview that Donald Trump had in the Oval Office. I think it might have been with Axios. No, it was with the guy with the complicated name, Stephanopoulos. Oh. Stephanopoulos was like, so what would happen if someone had dirt? Would you take that? He's like, you know, I might take it. I might take it. It would depend. Remember that whole thing where he was laying out exactly what he was in the process of doing at that time in hindsight? And now we're supposed to be like mystified. Like, well, would he really do something like that during election? He said he was going
to
do it.
Even the far-reaching argument that says we have to look into his mind and see where his approach was to these things. He told us where his mind was in that interview. His approach to these things. He did it during 2016. He called for China to make sure you investigate. Hey, I would love to see that from you. Hey, Russia, can you do this for me? He says it openly. So we find where his mind is, even though we don't even have to. We see the evidence of what he did and what others saw him do and witnessed him do.
Yeah, exactly. And Mick Mulvaney admitted it on TV. And like 1 week into the Ukraine scandal, Donald Trump in Chopper Talk was like, you know what? I think Ukraine should investigate Joe Biden. And I think China should do it too. How many times do you have to confess to a crime on TV and have all of your underlings confessing to the crime on TV before it starts to stick in some fashion?
And listen, one more thing on that. The last thing that Noah Feldman was saying was a chance with what Trump was doing in this whole phone call and this pressure campaign. It was a chance to benefit himself in his reelection campaign. Now, when you have the rest of these senators and congressmen on the Republican side backing him, there's a reason why they do it, because that also gives them electoral opportunities. So they got opportunities when it comes to like political appointments. They got they push through their tax breaks, which is on due. Cabinet positions. Then at least maybe speaking fees after you're out of office. Book deals. All these things help benefit the people that are supporting him. So it's not just him. Mm. It's not like he's some rogue president, which he is, but some rogue president is doing this on his own. But when you have this much backing, they're doing it for their own benefit as well.
Yeah.
It's all political games.
And we talked about the fact that he's going around raising money for senators who are going to be sitting in judgment of him once this impeachment inquiry gets to the Senate. I mean, look, that is totally legal. You're allowed to do that. Seems corrupt. Maybe we should change those laws. But as of right now, he's allowed to do it. But we're allowed to look at some of those senators and say, well, if the guy just raised $50,000, $100,000, $250,000 for your reelection, are you really unbiased when it comes to judging whether he committed an impeachable offense? Noah Feldman had one other comment I wanted to read. I don't think it's possible to emphasize this strongly enough. A president who will not cooperate with an impeachment inquiry is putting himself above the law. Now, putting yourself above the law as president is the core of an impeachable offense. And you can listen to Noah Feldman on that. You can go back to the late 90s and listen to Lindsey Graham when he said that exact thing. That's an impeachable offense. And so Trump is right now looking at potentially three impeachable offenses. Bribery, which is I think the only specific crime listed under the impeachment clause of the Constitution, abuse of power, which is very clear, it underlies this entire thing, and obstruction of justice, which is not only well established, but ongoing. And by the way, like, I don't think we need to be diplomatic to the Republicans, but we let him get away with the first 10 counts of obstruction of justice free. We just gave that to him as like a present. And he squandered that. You got all that obstruction, but you just wanted more. And so that's all there. Now, by the way, in that whole report, if you read it, this is not like they're not voting immediately on impeachment. It's going to have to go to the House Judiciary Committee. They're going to be going all over all this. So this is just another step in the process. There are more. What's interesting is that the Democrats have said they're going to do this relatively fast. And they're being attacked on that. We're going to have a witness a little bit later on who's saying, no, it's too fast. I would like you to ponder, what if they dragged it out for a year? Would the Republicans like that? If it was long, it's a damned if you do, damned if you don't thing. If the main concern is that this is going to affect the election, then shouldn't you get it done fast? And oh, then why did you wait so long into his term? Okay, well, if we had done it right after he became elected, would that have been acceptable? Like, this is purely hypothetical that the Ukraine thing hadn't even happened, but there is no time where it's acceptable in the same way that there's no time where you get to talk about gun control. You're always too close to some shooting.
Yeah, whenever you don't have a leg to stand on and your principles don't match up with anything that has to do with normal process of government, you have to come up with side notes and distractions
process.
to try and push people away from what's actually happening. So yeah, whatever narrative, they'll mold their narrative to whatever situation it fits. That's what happens to people that don't have any principles.
Yeah. There's another video I want to go to. They're very interesting. So the whole Ukraine thing, what Donald Trump was holding back and what he wanted to get, I think very understandable. But if you'd like an easier to understand version of this, consider this bit of video from Pamela Karlan, one of the law professor witnesses in today's hearing.
What happened in 2016 was bad enough. There is widespread agreement that Russian operatives intervened to manipulate our political process. But that distortion is magnified if a sitting president abuses the powers of his office actually to invite foreign intervention. To see why, imagine living in a part of Louisiana or Texas that's prone to devastating hurricanes and flooding. What would you think if you lived there and your governor asked for a meeting with the president to discuss getting disaster aid that Congress has provided for? What would you think if that president said, I would like you to do us a favor. I'll meet with you and I'll send the disaster relief once you brand my opponent a criminal. Wouldn't you know in your gut that such a president had abused his office, that he betrayed the national interest, and that he was trying to corrupt the electoral process?
That's devastating. Obviously, no, we wouldn't accept it. Now, I know some Republicans are going to come back with a really disingenuous response and say, well, the federal government, they negotiate with the state governments all the time where they'll offer aid, but only under certain conditions. Before you see that, before Ben Shapiro goes on some head shaking rant about that, that again are the interests of governments, not of one man. And the example's very clear. I want you to do me a favor, okay? Has nothing to do with the people, the federal government, our diplomatic objectives. It has to do with one man's personal political goals.
Absolutely, and you can deny that all you want, but it's just not the case. There was a side note, I was listening to CNN's analysis on this, and this has been an ongoing thing. It's not just CNN, it's just I heard it this morning, so that's where the example came from. But we have a Harvard law professor, we have a Stanford law professor, both we just heard from speaking about this in very explicit and obvious terms. And I hate the narrative that keeps coming that says, well, Democrats have the problem of making sure that American people didn't really understand all this lawyer speak, all this attorney speak, all these smart guys in academia speak about the law. This is pretty straightforward. I don't think I'm this highly overly intelligent person that gets something about the law, because when I read a legal document, I get confused. So I get it, but this is straightforward. Stop telling politicians, stop telling the American public that they're too dumb to get this.
Yeah.
You don't have to listen to these 5 hours. This is what they say. There's 5 hours of testimony, man. This is really some deep stuff, man. It's kind of dry today. No, it's not. Yeah. This is direct. This is easy. Like they give you layman's term examples. Like when she's talking about if you have disaster relief and you live in Louisiana. That's straightforward. People don't not understand that. Stop telling us that we're dumb.
Yeah, and the really confusing thing is, If you check in on his Republican defenders in government, but especially in the media, like a Sean Hannity show, you will be blasted in the brain with two I think, contradictory narratives, one of which is Donald Trump would never push for another country to investigate the Bidens, and he definitely shouldn't be impeached for obstruction of justice. And then like 10 minutes later, it's they should definitely be investigating the Bidens. They're totally corrupt. They should be investigating them. And Donald Trump should not participate in this impeachment inquiry in any way. He should block all the documents. He should block all the witnesses. So it's he's not doing this. And I want him to do this.
Yeah.
Like, it's not even a thing where we refuse to admit it happened. We're lobbying for it in real time while denying that it matters or that there should be any consequences. Now, one other thing, though. I want to give you a bit of the video from one of the Republican witnesses today. So this is a Jonathan Turley who spoke today, but unfortunately for him, he also spoke back in the 90s. And so we're going to show you both of those things. So first of all, here is a section from his closing remarks today that's been making the rounds on social media.
I get it. You're mad. The president's mad. My Republican friends are mad. My Democratic friends are mad. My wife is mad. My kids are mad. Even my dog seems mad. And Luna's a golden doodle, and they don't get mad. So we're all mad. Where has that taken us? Will a slipshod impeachment make us less mad? Will it only invite an invitation for the madness to follow every future administration? That is why this is wrong.
So now you're going to see that section, and Sean Hannity's going to love it. He also goes on to say all the things that Trump did wrong. So he acknowledges that Trump did a lot of really inappropriate wrong stuff. But again, facts don't care about your feelings. We have a guy who just talks about how mad his golden doodle is and how everybody's just, oh, you're just doing this because you're mad. Let's ignore all of the testimony, all the witnesses, all the call records, all the transcripts, all of that. You're just doing it because you're mad. You can't impeach a guy based off of that. So I'm going to have what he said about a different case of impeachment, but first I wanted to give you a chance to respond.
Again, if you got law professors, you got guys coming in to speak in the legal basis for this, and your defense is you guys are mad. Mm-hmm. That's all you got.
Yeah.
No, that's a childlike defense. Give me some facts. Give me something that has some kind of precedence or something that has to do with our Constitution and our way of what we propose to be in this country, the way to defend this.
Yeah. So Jonathan Turley responds to the evidence showing that the president took aid, hundreds of millions of dollars that our ally needed, that we had allocated to them, and decided, I'm not going to give that to you until you help me defeat my 2020 opponent. So that's not good enough. But what was good enough to impeach a president? Well, Professor Turley, in a statement written November 9th, 1998, declared that impeaching President Bill Clinton was necessary to literally protect the, quote, existence of the government and to prevent, quote, contempt for law and anarchy. That if we did not impeach Bill Clinton, a guy who they were saying lied about having an affair and obstructed justice in lying to hide an affair he had, Donald Trump, we didn't barely need to hide those anymore. We know about all of them. There would be anarchy in the streets of the United States if we didn't impeach Bill Clinton over those lies. Now, Bill Clinton did lie, and arguably that is obstruction of justice. You can make that case, but he said there could be riots in the streets. He goes on to say this, to some extent, I believe this is mostly him summarizing Louis Brandeis, but just bear in mind, this is Jonathan Turley back during the Clinton years. In a government of laws, existence of the government will be imperiled if it fails to observe the law scrupulously. Our government is the potent, the omnipresent teacher. For good or for ill, it teaches the whole people by its example. Crime is contagious. If the government becomes a lawbreaker, it breeds contempt for law. It invites every man to become a law unto himself. It invites anarchy. And so you have to get this man out of the Oval Office because he lied about the sex he was having. This whole thing where we hold hundreds of millions of dollars that are potentially stopping Ukraine from being overrun by partisans supported by Russia, and he did that so that he could take out Joe Biden. That's fine, I'm not worried about that.
It's one of those quotes where you can take to one of these supporters of the president and then say it and say, Adam Schiff said this. Oh, and they will say, oh, that's BS, that's crazy. Adam Schiff, Shifty Schiff, that's nonsense. Anarchy, get out of here. And then reveal to them that this guy is defending your president.
Exactly, exactly. I bring this up because it's interesting, and there are still some people out there that care about consistency and hypocrisy. But in general, it's not going to hurt him. He's probably going to be just fine. Although he does have to return to his home where apparently everybody's mad at him and even his dog doesn't like him. So anyway, we are going to take a break. We come back, Candace's going to be joining us on the other side.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called Un*****. the Republic or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of On the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Joining us now is a congressional candidate running in Florida's 23rd District, Jen Perlman. Welcome to the Damage Report.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Glad to have you on. And I want to talk about your platform, and I want to start off in a different way than we normally do. Generally, we don't get into too much foreign policy with the candidates who join us on the show because honestly, they very rarely focus on foreign policy in their campaign literature or their speeches. But you are different. You actually have some pretty bold stances when it comes to foreign policy. Can you talk to us a little bit about your platform there?
I never really thought of it as being so bold. I am clearly against regime change wars. I think that most of everything I think we're doing right now is more imperialist than anything. It's been since, World War II that we've had an actual legal war. I think our military budget is just ridiculous and should be cut in half. And, you know, there's just so many. But I don't know that these ideas are that bold. It just seems like common sense to me.
Well, it could be that it is bold and common sense, bold in terms of the political likelihood. So for instance, you say we should cut the military budget by 50%. I think I've literally tweeted that exact same thing. But even if you get into Congress, you are going to find yourself surrounded by a lot of people who probably are not as progressive as you. So how do we make the case that is the direction we should move in? And I know that your platform, you know, goes beyond that, but I believe that military budget, that's a pretty important core part of it.
Yeah, I think that people are becoming more and more aware of our actual true motivation for what we do overseas and what we're doing in countries like Syria and our interests in Venezuela and Bolivia and such. And I think that people are starting to wake up. I think it's going to obviously take longer. And I think that as soon as we can get more and more non-corporatists into Congress that are representing people and not the military-industrial complex, we can actually start having a normal conversation and working to come to some sort of understanding as to what our defense spending should be instead of offense spending. Mm-hmm. So I just think, I don't know that it's something that's going to happen, you know, in one session, two sessions, three sessions, but as non-corporatists can trickle our way in, then I think we can finally get to what people are most interested in doing, which is not being in all these wars.
I hope that you're right. Now, I guess it's a combination of some of these, of domestic and foreign policy, but you support a number of high-profile progressive policy proposals, including Medicare for All, a Green New Deal, College for All, those sorts of things. You also support some things that are not as universal across progressive candidates, including congressional term limits. Can you talk a bit about that?
Yeah, it's funny. It is one of those strange things where I'm not, you know, in line with the progressive caucus, but this is how I see it. I understand where they're coming from, because on the progressive side, the election is the term limit, and it should be completely up to the people to decide how long someone should be in office. And you've got lifelong civil servants like Bernie Sanders, and I respect that, and I understand that. However, we do not have an election process right now that is working functionally enough where I would feel comfortable in trusting it. For example, my congressperson has been sitting in her seat for 15 years, and it requires very little vote to stay there because we have closed primaries and a gerrymandered district.
Yes.
So if we had open primaries, she probably would have been gone years ago. So the reason I support term limits really is that I see that at this point we are in a place where people are just getting stuck and staying there. Yeah. So I mean, I understand where the progressives are coming from, but I just think that we're just, the system is not allowing for proper elections right now.
So you mentioned your opponent, so why don't we transition to that? So Jen Perlman, you're running against the incumbent. It's a figure I had to look up because I wasn't familiar with. Most people probably aren't going to know this. Debbie, is it Wasserman Schultz? No, I'm joking. So yes, she's a very high profile Democrat. Made a name for herself in the 2016 election, for better or for worse. So you're taking on a pretty powerful Democrat. So talk to me about how that has helped influence your campaign so far.
You know, she has been my congresswoman, like I said, for 15 years. And, you know, a lot has happened over 15 years, not just with her, but with a lot of representatives, wherein it's very clear that their motives are not serving the people. Their motives are either serving their donors or their own careers, mm-hmm. Quite honestly. So the choices that they're, and it isn't just her. You know, but I'm obviously more keenly aware of who she takes money from and what she votes on because she's my representative.
Yeah.
And as far as that she's powerful, yeah. I mean, at this point, it feels like to me, just we've been taken over by corporate America, and so it's powerful for all of them.
Yeah. Now, we've talked to some candidates, for instance, who are running against like a Susan Collins, who has made a couple of really high profile votes that are definitely going to be used in campaign ads, things like that. Are there particular actions that Debbie Wasserman Schultz has taken that you're going to focus on as an example of what makes you such different candidates?
Well, I mean, my three biggest core issues are Medicare for All, Green New Deal, and criminal justice reform. So I can just go through those three alone. So Debbie does not support single payer healthcare. And she has never indicated as such, and members of our progressive caucus have actually gone to her office and met with her about this. She has no intention of signing single payer healthcare. So in healthcare alone, that's huge. Debbie also does not support the Green New Deal. And to me, and I do not understand this for anybody in any position of leadership in this country, how you cannot get behind something that is a mission statement that isn't even specific policy, but is basically saying we have to do everything we can do to fix this. How people do not have that level of ambition is shameful. So she doesn't support that. And as far as criminal justice reform, I mean, she has supported for-profit prison industry. She takes money from companies that are affiliated and contract with private prison industry. So, you know, this is just something that to me is unacceptable. I mean, corrections should never be for profit.
I agree. Now, if people would like to find out more about your platform, where should they head?
Jen2020.com. We're also at Jen2020 on Facebook. And please follow us on Twitter and Instagram at JenFL23. And please send some support. We definitely need money. We're up against a corporate monolith, and we need monthly donors. We're asking for $23 for District 23.
Jen Perlman, candidate for the 23rd District. Thank you again for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
I'm gonna take a short break here. When we come back, a little bit of drama on the international stage after this. In London, during the NATO meeting, a number of world leaders were caught on a hot mic talking about President Trump in less than positive terms. Here's a bit of that video. Thank you. So there you had Justin Trudeau, not in costume, Boris Johnson, Emmanuel Macron, I think that was Stephen Colbert, I'm joking. But anyway, they were talking about the president and how he had, as soon as he got to the meeting, he was gonna do, there was a photo shoot that turned into him ranting at the cameras for 40 minutes, which set back the whole thing. Now we're gonna have, Trudeau was asked about this. We've also got Trump responding on video. What'd you think?
Well, I mean, again, another instance of the world laughing at us, as we were talking about before. I think it was at G7 when they laughed before, and you know, and we know this president came forward and said, nobody's gonna, we're gonna stop being the laughing stock of the world, when in reality, we've become the laughing stock of the world since he's walked in. Again, another complete opposite fact based off of exactly what he said wouldn't happen.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not surprising anymore. We know how they feel. The only problem is that they're not allowed to say this openly.
Exactly. Now, Donald Trump was asked about this. Here's how he responded.
The idea of Prime Minister Trudeau talking about you last night?
Well, he's two-faced.
Do you think that Germany is too naive?
And honestly, with Trudeau, he's a nice guy. I find him to be a very nice guy. But you know, the truth is that I called him out on the fact that he's not paying 2%. And I guess he's not very happy about it. I mean, you were there, a couple of you were there, and he's not paying 2%, and he should be paying 2%. It's Canada, they have money, and they should be paying 2%. So I called him out on that, and I'm sure he wasn't happy about it, but that's the way it is.
Now, I know what you're expecting, that I'm going to eviscerate Donald Trump in a little bit maybe, but that was actually for Trump a pretty mature response, I think.
What, the second part of
he
the two-faced part?
He said he was two-faced. Uh-huh. Okay, fine. But then he goes on and he talks about the policy. He didn't slam him and call him short or ugly, which—
Which policy? The policy of how much they're contributing
The NATO contributions,
but
yeah.
What does that have to do with the fact that he's held up the meetings and he sat there for 40 minutes and he goes off the top and makes these speeches and three world leaders are talking about how annoying he is? None of that has anything to do with how much Canada's paying. What about how much France, what about how much Britain is paying? Because those other two world leaders were in on this conversation
as well. I'm just saying he didn't call him like shifty Justin. He didn't talk about the blackface incident or anything, and that's a super low bar, but Donald Trump generally trips over bars that low. Now, to the core of this, Trudeau was asked about this. He says, last night I made a reference to the fact that there was an unscheduled press conference before my meeting with President Trump, and I was happy to take part in it. But it was certainly notable, and I've had a number of good conversations with the president over the course of this day and yesterday. He adds that he had a great meeting with him. But it should be noted that Donald Trump abruptly canceled a press conference that was supposed to mark the end of the meeting and instead just left after this. Because maybe he didn't want to be on stage with him. And here's the thing, I don't want to read too much into this, it's not the most important thing in the world. But Donald Trump, in the same way that I was doing a live video earlier today, Rudy Giuliani, who had sort of threatened Trump with blackmail material to some extent, he says jokingly, we just found out from Vanity Fair yesterday, Trump banned him from going on Fox News anymore. He's a thin-skinned individual. That video of Trudeau and Macron and Johnson, what they were saying was not that bad.
Totally.
It was not that bad. And yet, it tells him they're talking about me.
Yep.
They're joking about me. I'm technically in the club, but I'm not really in the club. And even though I say that I'm strong and I'm beautiful and everyone loves me, I know deep down that they don't actually love me. They're joking about me, they're laughing at me.
This goes back to the thing I was saying about the billionaires that were crying about being slammed and lambasted by people like Elizabeth Warren, and they get all mad and say, how dare you talk about us like that? If I'm the president of the United States and I'm bragging about how powerful and strong I am and best country in the world, I could not care less about what you have to say about me, because I'm doing my job. So if I see the three guys are talking about how long I took in a press conference because I talked too much, I'd be like, I guess I did, huh?
Yeah. Joke.
Who cares?
Yeah.
Who cares?
Yeah.
It means you have very low self-esteem and not much self-confidence, and you need people to support your weak mind.
And unfortunately, we know that that's true. And so I would say for the next 48 hours or so, maybe 3 days, I would be worried about what he might do, because it's gonna be gnawing at the back of his tiny little pea-sized brain, like thinking about what happened and when the late night comics are joking about it and when SNL's definitely gonna have Trudeau talking. So anyway, I would just be a little bit worried about how he might respond. Okay, with that, we're gonna take a short break. We come back, climate crisis after this. There's so much going on, but every day climate change is proceeding. And so let's touch base. Donald Trump has had a few attempts at the question, how seriously do you take climate change? What are you gonna do about it? We've had, you know, the whole conversation about the Green New Deal now. Greta Thunberg is gonna be, she's all over the place. So he has had an opportunity to learn. Let's see what he does in his latest at bat.
Honestly, climate change is very important to me. And, you know, I've done many environmental impact statements over my life. And I believe very strongly in very, very crystal clear, clean water and clean air. That's a big part of climate change.
No, nope, it's not.
It's a big part.
It's not. They're not unrelated, but it's not a big part of it. It's not like, well, if you can drink the water and it's clean, guess we don't have to worry about carbon concentrations. It's the same thing every time. We're asking you about a specific thing. Overall heating having to do with the carbon that we're emitting into the atmosphere. And he can't not talk about clean air and clean water. Which, by the way, is a dodge because he doesn't care about those things. And
absolutely,
his environmental policies are horrible for those as well.
Exactly. That was going to be my point. So you're talking about you care about it, but what are you doing about it? Again, every time he says, and I've said it many, many times, that I care about clean air and clean water. What have you done about it then? Because you're the president. We know how you care about tax breaks because you did something about that. Mm-hmm. We know how much you care about deregulating corporations because you did that as well. You do things that you care about. Mm-hmm. You don't do things that you don't care about. So again, also when he talks about the African-American unemployment, which one of your policies has initiated or helped out with unemployment numbers? Mm-hmm. And also, what have you done to help with climate change since you care about us so much? Which policies? Ask him some specifics and make him go, I said it.
Yeah. Yeah, look, please, you know what you should do? You should watch the Damage Report all the time. But if you look at our analysis of the changes they've made to the way that coal plants are regulated, that has increased certain types of emissions. We've even told you estimates of how many additional people have died each year as a result of that new pollution in the air when it comes to the water. Obama's Waters of the US rule, they revoked that, allowing more dumping of things into rivers and streams. That makes the water less clean. So even if those two things were connected, or even if we were ignoring climate change connection to air and water, which we should because they're not directly connected, you have not been doing right by the air. You certainly haven't been doing right by the water. So you're doing a dodge, which is something where you're arguably even worse than you are on climate change. But I have one more video for you, and that has to do with one of the effects of climate change, rising sea levels. So let's see what happens.
Concerned about rising sea levels at all, Sherman? You know, I'm concerned about everything, but I'm also concerned about nuclear proliferation, which I think is a very important topic, and it's a topic that we're going to discuss today. The whole situation with nuclear to me is very, very important, as we've been discussing today at the various meetings that we've had. I think that's something that has to be taken care of, and it has to be dealt with very strongly. Okay.
You were an alien and you had been like, you tapped all of our communications and you were listening. You were like, okay, we want to learn English. Let's go to the president. They've chosen him as their leader. He's the smartest. You could have listened to everything he said for the last 30 years. You'd have no idea what the word strongly means because it means everything and nothing. It doesn't mean anything. So asked about rising sea levels, a gigantic threat that's going to destroy tens, maybe hundreds of billions of dollars of real estate in the United States alone. It's going to force the relocation of literally millions of people. Worst storms for decades leading up to it. His answer is, I'm concerned about everything. I'm also concerned about nuclear proliferation. The situation with nuclear is really bad.
Which situation? Again, what about nuclear? And then, so John, you may ask me, hey, so JR, are you hungry? You gonna go to lunch today? Is there a food truck outside? You wanna go check out the food truck? And I was like, you know, actually, I was thinking about lunch. And you know, I'm gonna take my car down to the shop and get the oil change because I've been needing that oil change for a while now. I care deeply about my oil change. You go, what the hell are you talking about? I was asking you about lunch.
Yeah.
Why did you pivot to oil change? You'd go, something's wrong with JR.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, and we know that for all that he says that he doesn't accept the science of climate change and he certainly doesn't care about sea level rise, we know that his actual properties are preparing for it in the US and abroad. When it comes to his money, they accept that this is happening. But really important, we don't have time. Okay, so there is also updated information on the effects that his tariffs on solar panels have had on the solar industry in the United States. I wanna give that the time that it deserves, so we'll be covering that a little bit later on. But just if you had hoped that this international conversation, generally being led by a youth movement around the world to do something about the climate crisis, might have finally gotten through to Donald Trump, it has not. And Greta Thunberg, when asked, would she meet with the president, she said that would be a waste of my time. Once again, she nailed it.
He also wouldn't understand what she's saying.
He'd have no idea. Okay, so we're gonna take a short break. Come back, one more story for you. Republican Representative Devin Nunes has had a pretty ridiculous couple of years. He sued an imaginary cow. He's now been drawn into the Ukraine scandal, which he was presiding over while also now being implicated in. And he didn't mention any of that, but he's decided that going forward, he's going to do the next couple of years serious. So to that end, he is suing CNN for $435 million for defamation.
What's the plan? What's the plan here?
I think the plan is to get $435 million.
Or maybe
I think he'll do it.
$4.35 possibly.
So really fast, here's the details. He's suing over a November 22nd report that Lev Parnas, the indicted associate of Joe Biden, was prepared to tell Congress that Nunes met with Viktor Shokin, the former Ukrainian prosecutor, in Vienna last year to discuss, quote, digging up dirt on Joe Biden. Nunes denied the claims at the time, but CNN said that he did not respond to them for comment. Instead, he told Breitbart.com that the claims were demonstrably false. CNN declined to comment on the lawsuit. And when Devin Nunes went on Fox News and was asked about taking a trip out there, he dodged the question.
It was one of those answers where it's like, yeah, the truth will come out when it needs to be, or I'll talk about it when the right time comes. Yeah. And also, with the final impeachment answer that the House Intelligence Committee came forward with, there's those call logs that Devin Nunes spoke with Parnas, as we've already mentioned. We were talking about this off air as well. So which one is it? Then he went on Hannity last night, and Hannity asked him, like, hey, these call logs say that you spoke to him. He goes, I don't know, I don't remember that guy. Hey, the call logs say you remember that guy.
So you spoke to him four times.
How does that go with your lawsuit now?
Yeah, I cannot discount the possibility that if you're in elected office, and especially if you're an older person, your phone habits are different. But he had four conversations with that guy. I have had four telephone conversations this decade. I would remember the person that I had them with, I think. But so he's suing CNN. There's more to this, but let's focus on that for just a minute. CNN reported on what the lawyer for Lev Parnas says is true. Mm-hmm. That is not defamation. Yep. Okay, this is a lawsuit that's ongoing. A lawyer has said this is their claim. CNN didn't say, oh, he definitely did it. That's what we think. They just reported a fact in an ongoing legal proceeding. There's no defamation case to be had there. And he is a congressman. He's not some rando suing people around the country. Well, he technically is, because it's not his first lawsuit.
This
but it's
deflection.
An obvious stunt.
Yeah, it's another deflection to make sure that people, the flashing signs of Nunes involved with it, listed on the impeachment report, and then also in connection with this. Well, everyone sees is one of the guys is being indicted on the situations that was going on in Ukraine. Mm-hmm. So he's like, man, my name keeps coming up in all these situations that I was involved in. I need to have my name come up in something where I'm on the attack.
Yes.
So that people who are dumb enough to follow me will go, oh, but Nunes is filing another lawsuit. Yeah. This must be legit this time. You're only going to convince people that are already on your side that this makes any sense.
Yeah, and honestly, suing for as much as he is implies, well, then they must have done something really wrong.
Where's that number come
for this
from?
Much. It's completely made up. but anyway, one other point on this, and I kind of wish now that I had pulled the video, although we don't have much time. This morning, new development in this case, at least in terms of legal analysis on Fox News, Greg Jarrett, who's like, he's paid by Fox News to do legal analysis. He says what probably happened or might have happened was that someone stole Devin Nunes' phone and used it to call Rudy Giuliani, the White House, and Lev Parnas.
You know how that goes.
We're not really legal analysts, but what do you think about that argument? Do you think that someone a year ago stole Nunes' phone, and Nunes hasn't mentioned it, to call someone that nobody knew who they were because it involves a scandal that would only develop a year later?
It doesn't even have to matter more. Hey, when you misplace your phone in the house, you get a little freaked out. Oh man, did I leave it in the bedroom? Oh man, is it in the kitchen? I gotta find my phone. Did I drop it outside? So if somebody steals your phone and you're a congressman who's associated with the president and all these international dealings, and your phone gets taken and phone calls are made, you don't ever mention that?
No. When this entire thing blows up, and you don't remember that guy, remember, he told Sean Hannity, I don't remember it, you wouldn't say, hey, wait, wasn't my phone stolen for a while last year? Maybe that links up. Apparently, also, by the way, Greg Jarrett, you might want to work this into your analysis. He apparently bought some tickets to go to the place he says he wasn't at. That must have also been theft and fraud, I assume. This is Fox News. It's serious, not some random place. But that's the analysis you're gonna get there. Anyway, thank you as always for joining me. Always good to have you on. Everybody, stick around tomorrow because joining me in studio, Emma Vigeland's gonna be hosting the entire show with me again. So it should be a lot of fun. Thank you for joining us today. Rate the podcast if you haven't, and we'll see you tomorrow morning. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.